are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, September 13th. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. We're doing a lot of debate wrap-up. Friday the 13th. So far, nothing's gone wrong. Joining me today will be Digby from the blog Hullabaloo, also known as Heather Parton. Then, later in the program, Chris James of Not Even a Show will be here to talk prank phone calls, harassing people on radio shows.
He's a prank call artist.
Also on the program today, full Democratic debate recap as Joe Biden shows his path to primary victory and general election loss. House Judiciary passes rules and procedures for an impeachment hearing. Big deal. Elizabeth Warren, Ron Wyden reveal Social Security expansion plans, separate ones, both great. Donald Trump opens up Anwar to drilling, finally.
It's been a long effort.
White House is now trying to strip California of its ability to set its own car pollution standards. Meanwhile, California just banned private prisons and ICE facilities. Good stuff coming out of California, folks. Lastly, Trump's African-American has quit the Republican Party.
That is a lie. I've said a Republican.
All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. We're going to be talking mostly about the debate. There was only one of them this week. And it's the contours of this race are becoming a little bit more clear, I think, even though it's quite possible in October we're going to have multiple debates again. Tom Steyer apparently is going to qualify because he was able to buy a lot of donations. I know Matt Iglesias said on Twitter that everybody knows that Tom Steyer's donations are fake. I don't know if he was being, funny about that or not. I imagine if you have a lot of money to spend, right, you don't need to raise money, then you can spend more on your revenue than you get in revenue, and it still has value to you. This is a dynamic that exists in the tech world quite a bit, actually. I mean, it is true. The way that companies sell themselves so they get bought out is they will spend $1.10 to get a dollar's worth of revenue. And then a bigger company comes along and says, "Oh, well, look at all this revenue. We can help with expenses. That's easy because we can amortize it across all our different operations, and we can get rid of some redundancies." But this new revenue, we'll take that. And in this instance, there is federal government's not saying, like, what's your net revenue in terms of spending versus what comes in? It's just, or I should say the Democratic National Committee, they're just looking at how many donations you got. And so Tom Steyer may be in the next debate. There may be, it's possible Tulsi Gabbard may be in the next debate. But the contours of the evening, you know, I think made it clear. We'll talk more about that with Digby. Specifically, I'm talking about just sort of the wide array of forces that were deployed to basically say, don't believe your lying eyes. Joe Biden had a sharp night last night, and anybody who messed with him was doing something wrong. And I'm not convinced, frankly, that there weren't people on stage who were also sort of trying to promote that idea a little bit. But certainly, you know, Rahm Emanuel, I could have told you what he was going to say 3 weeks ago if you told me that he was going to be the first voice as a neutral commentator on ABC television, which carried the debates. I mean, and look, I don't know how much this has an impact or not on things, but a broad acceptance of some of the reality about what Joe Biden showed last night, I think, would hasten, if not make his demise in this primary inevitable. And I'm going to spare Digby having to watch this clip. I mean, look, this is...
She might enjoy it.
Well, it's true. But, And there's people who are going to say, like, this is cruel, you're picking on it. But look, here's the bottom line. Two things cannot coexist. One, we cannot say it is an existential question as to whether Donald Trump should be reelected or not. And then say, you're being too mean by picking on somebody for something they can't control.
I would never make fun of Joe's teeth.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the point. Yeah. Is that, like, look, seriously, you can't make an argument that this is the most important election in multiple generations. But you got to cut the guy slack because, look, you're going to end up there, too. And I know it. I know it. The idea that I'm going to have an embarrassing moment with my teeth at one point in my career is I've accepted that.
I thought you were saying the other part, like, you need to get record players in front of those kids.
Well, we're going to get there. But here is Joe Biden. The moment where what do you say? The bridge fell down.
Fell out.
Graders would be in eighth grade today. At the time, there was a groundswell in this country to get something done. President Obama asked you to lead the push for gun control.
Now you see, he's trying to push it up
your
there
ability
now.
To reach across the aisle to get things done. But 4 months after Sandy Hook, a measure to require expanded background checks
trying
died on
up.
The Senate
trying
floor.
Push it up. Push it up.
If you couldn't get it done after Sandy Hook, why should voters give you another chance?
Because it got done before. Oh, I'm the only one up here who's ever beat the NRA.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing around with his teeth, and he just didn't have him set when he started there. And, I mean, look, like I say, well, first off, let me just say this. Getquip.com/majority. There is a reason why I have been so attuned to my dental hygiene over the past couple of years, because I know I'm getting to this age. I know there's a certain inevitability. I know a lot of people, frankly, who have that type of bridge work. But the bottom line is, and this isn't the biggest argument as to why, you know, Joe Biden shouldn't be president or shouldn't be the nominee. But you can bet Donald Trump would make some hay on this. I'll be interested to see if he says anything now, because I think he's actually sort of wants Biden as the nominee. And it'll be interesting to see how strategic his mockery is. Certainly, Kamala Harris.
I think when they make fun
to...
of people whose eyes blowing up and bleeding, it's, you know, in a sense, it's really unfair and really tasteless. And,
right.
You know, Maybe Joe still does have his fastball.
Yeah, exactly.
It was certainly a nice way to underscore the outdatedness of his politics for anyone who didn't get that yet.
Well, the thing is that that's part of the narrative. I mean, part of the narrative is people think that Joe Biden has lost a step or two or five. And if this happened to Elizabeth Warren, I don't think she has a bridge, but Bernie Sanders very well may. If it happened to Bernie Sanders, it would not. I mean, for other reasons, I think it would get blown up. But it doesn't necessarily play into the same narrative. There's nobody out there who is saying Bernie Sanders has lost a step. They may say, like, he's been a cranky old man for 35 years or something to the effect. But the fact of the matter is, everybody knows it. Everybody who pays attention to these things knows what's going on with Joe Biden. And the people who don't care about it, like a Rahm Emanuel, they just know that, look, there's been multiple presidents who have gotten into office and had to be basically walked through everything. And that doesn't matter. Because it's guys like me, Rahm Emanuel, who'll be there actually pulling the strings. And I'm perfectly fine with that. In fact, that's the way I would like it. So, but we'll talk more. There's more substantive, I think, critique of Joe Biden. But this plays into a narrative. And frankly, it captures one of the issues that people have that, like, this is not, I would not be supportive of Joe Biden 15 years ago. But that's a separate issue as to whether people who would be supportive of Joe Biden 15 years ago can today say, like, that's the Joe Biden I'm supporting.
Give me a break, Sam. Do you even like Earth, Wind, and Fire? I mean, let's get real deal here.
Folks. Oh, wait, where the hell did I put
it? Misplaced it again?
Yeah. Oh, no, here, I got it right here. Support from today's show comes from Mova Globes. Mova Globes turns all on their own. I don't even have to talk about it. I have it right here. So I've been, you know, I got this and I'm supposed to bring it home to Saul and he keeps asking me where it is. But the thing I'm starting to realize is, like, I like to play with it during the show a little bit because it's sort of cool. It's calming. And also every day I try and enhance my my understanding of geography. I mean, I know where basically a lot of this stuff is. I'm not terribly surprised, but like, oh, my God, I had no idea that Chad was in Africa. But they're super cool. There's no batteries needed. There's no cords or anything like that. They turn all on their own. Hidden magnets provide the movement. They have 40 different designs. Like, you can peruse through their things. They have stuff like that are, you know, typical globes where you have like a relief map in blue like I have here, but they have a white and gold version. They have a sort of a more ocean oriented version. There's Earth from what it would look like from space. There's blue and silver. There's black and silver. Then they have stuff like an antique terrestrial globe, which I feel like Matt would really like, or the constellations, which is super cool. And then they have them like Jupiter or Uranus or Pluto, Titan moon. They have Earth and clouds, Saturn, Venus. And then they have like some that are just different motifs, like a Van Gogh motif or something like that. They have a Nas version. I'm joking. They don't. But wanted to see how Michael would react to that.
I caught you. I like it.
But they're great.
It's
super
a great
cool.
looking globe.
It's a great
awesome.
Looking globe. And they've got vintage map from 1790. They sell a couple of different types of bases for it. And they've got one of an asteroid, the Vesta asteroid. Super cool. That 1790 map shows the maps of three voyages of Captain James Cook. And I don't think there's an America there because Cook didn't realize that it existed at that time. So it's super cool. You have like this Vesta asteroid. It has like you can see each crater, multiple layers of red and brown and tan colors that make up its surface. I mean, it's pretty crazy. Graphics are satellite images taken by NASA. So it's reels, folks. Check out movaglobes.com/majority, MOVAGLOBES.com/majority. Use the code majority. You get 10% off your purchase. That's MOVA, M-O-V-A, globes.com/majority. Use the code majority, get 10% off your purchase. All right, going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Digby about the debate last night. And maybe we'll also get to these Social Security expansion plans with Digby. If not, I certainly will be talking about them. You can bet on that. And this the other big news is the House Judiciary setting the parameters for an impeachment inquiry. And the moment may be too late from an electoral standpoint. It's possible, I think. But it's still an important thing to do. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
Help the aged. One time they were just like you. Drinking, smoking, sex, and sniffing glue. Help the aged. Don't just put them in a home. Can't have much fun when they're all on their own. Give a hand if you can. Try to help them to unwind. Give them hope and give them comfort. Cast them run out of time. In the meantime, we try to forget that nothing lasts forever. No big deal, so give us all a feel. Falling down our thoughts away. When did you first
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. On the phone, ladies and gentlemen, it is always a pleasure to welcome to the program Heather Parton, a writer for Salon. But hopefully, well, I don't know, hopefully, but I would imagine many of you know her as...
Are you ready for some pee-pee?
There you go. Digby from the blog Hullabaloo. Hello, Heather.
Hey, Sam. How are you?
I am well. I know you stayed up late last night to watch the debate. I know it's a little bit early to get up on the West Coast. I appreciate your joining us. Give me your just overall, just like top line. If you've got to write the headline, I wouldn't say for the Washington Post because it might be different than what you would write. But, I mean, what would you say the top line is?
Well, okay, I'm not going to be a good Washington Post headline writer. I don't really understand how to do that. But I will say that from my perspective, as, you know, sort of a semi-activist writer, lefty, you know, of long-standing observer of politics, that, you know, this field that we have of the Democratic candidates for president is pretty impressive, certainly compared to what they're offering up on the other side and compared to what we saw in 2016 in the Republican primary. You know, these were pretty, it was a substantive debate, I think, more than they had been in the, you know, previously. And, you know, I felt like I learned something and that this is actually a pretty good process this time among the Democrats. Now, maybe I sound like some kind of a Pollyanna, but I feel like this is going okay. And I'm not one to be, I've never been one to say, you know, hey, everybody's got to get out of the way and, you know, everybody needs to quit. Whatever, it's only September. I think there's time, and I'm sure that we're going to see some dropouts very soon. But I got a lot out of it, to be honest. I didn't find it particularly boring. I thought that they were good, and it was good to see the front runners all together, and kind of, you know, exchanging ideas with one another. So I mean, I think it's a pretty good reflection of where the Democratic Party is right now.
What was the stuff? I mean, I'm just curious as to, and you know, certainly I think I learned more about some of the specifics of plans. But what jumped out to you that you were like, I had no idea. I'm glad that I watched this debate. I heard that.
Well, I mean, I think that they gave, well, with the couple of exceptions, and we can talk about the front runner Joe Biden in a minute, but I think that they were pretty articulate about where their values are, what their belief system is. I mean, you know, you had this famous moment with Beto O'Rourke, which I thought was really excellent. I am always impressed when somebody sounds like a real person instead of a politician, and I felt like he did when he was talking about, you know, the guns and racism in America. But it was also just on the details. I mean, I felt like I got quite a bit out of where Warren's discussion of her Medicare for All. Sanders, I thought, gave a really brilliant exposition about what he believes to be democratic socialism. And I know it's not new for him, but to do it in that particular venue and do it so well, I thought was really excellent. I'm sure there were people who saw that who went, wow, you know, that's interesting how he put that, and, you know, giving that a second thought that they may not have thought about before. You know, I felt that Amy Klobuchar, who is not my favorite candidate, she's a little bit more centrist than I am, but nonetheless, I think she gave a good rendition of what the centrist position is on a lot of these issues, particularly on Medicare for All. I think if you wanted somebody to articulate it, she did that position. I think she did it quite well. So, you know, it was just, you know, as they went, you know, even on foreign policy, you know, I mean, I was yearning for more foreign policy in the debate, and we got some questions, and about Afghanistan, it's pretty clear that, you know, where the Democratic Party is on that. Even Joe Biden, even Amy Klobuchar, you know, they're all saying that it's time to get out. Now, they have a different way of thinking about that than Donald Trump, but essentially I think we're in a place of consensus on that issue, which is new. I mean, that has not always been the case. So, you know, I felt that it was, you know, that there was a lot of substance there. You know, even, for instance, Kamala Harris's discussion about trade, I think what she said was kind of the sort of mainstream view that most Democrats probably would sign on to about trade, which is, you know, I want to have a trade policy that lets us export our stuff, as she put it, not our jobs. You know, that's sort of simple, but it's a reasonable way to explain that sort of thing. So, you know, as I was watching, instead of usually, you know, zoning out as I normally do in these things, I was interested in how they were articulating a lot of these ideas. And by the way, you know, I'm sure you've pointed this out already, you know, this party has moved. I mean, it is unrecognizable from where it would have been a decade ago.
Yep.
In any kind of a debate like this. I mean, they have really moved, and I think for real. I mean, this is not, you know, just some kind of positioning thing to, you know, placate some faction in the party. I mean, this party has moved in our direction, let me put it that way, and it's quite impressive. I mean, it's been a long time coming. I mean, you and I, Bug, we've been talking about this stuff for years. I mean, 20 years, really, just kind of pushing. Come on, you know, you got to get out of this post, you know, Reagan, you know, torpor,
right,
that the party had been under, and let's move. I mean, let's become Democrats again. And I think it's happened. I mean, I was stunned by how far left some of these, you know, issues were from people you wouldn't expect it from.
Right. I mean, I think that's true. And I think I think it's hard for people. You know, we got a lot of young people in the office, and I think it's hard for young people to really appreciate. I'm not saying it's sufficient, but to appreciate the movement that has taken place. The idea that Biden is defensive, let's say, and even Klobuchar is defensive on some level as to their moderate posture, it, you know, which relative to 10 years ago would have been the left, right? I mean, you know, short of like Kucinich on stage, someone like Klobuchar would be considered like she's sort of, you know, sent, you know, to the left of probably where everybody would be on stage on some level.
Absolutely.
And it's stunning. The other thing, and this is sort of, this has nothing to do with the debate, but Elizabeth Warren came out with her expansion of Social Security, which is a great proposal. It involves a donut hole, but the benefit increases are substantial. Substantial across the board for everybody, but super substantial for people living in the lowest 25 percentile of income in terms of what it does in shoring up their retirement. I mean, it would literally take 10 million elderly folks out of poverty, you know, like right off the bat. And then Ron Wyden. And I maybe, you know, like I just remember Ron Wyden's Medicare proposal or whatever it was. Like, I can't even remember when that was, 5 years ago, 10 years ago or something, where it was just people were like, you're undercutting everybody. Like, you know, like, how could you do this? And the guy came out with a very robust expansion of Social Security. You know, a whole idea of like basically getting rid of the way the preferential treatment that the capital gains get over payroll. I mean, this, you know, and they're thinking, you know, when a guy like Ron Wyden does it, he's not doing it because, you know, he's running for president. He's doing it because he wants to be in on a conversation that is definitely going to happen. And you and I, you know, we're following the Social Security thing throughout the Obama years. We would talk, it seemed like every time that we would talk, we were talking about how Obama has been planning on cutting Social Security since day one. You would make that, you know, you would cite the interview he gave in 09, on and on and on. And then at one point, they gave up, and then the Senate basically voted on a non-binding resolution to, or the caucus did, to expand Social Security. And it appears that that is an earnest, really genuine, earnest agenda item for the Democrats in the Senate.
It really does. And it's, yeah, I mean, let's talk about a popular kind of, yeah, a popular program. I mean, this is the kind of thing. I mean, you know, I think it's brilliant for Democrats to come out with this. I mean, you're talking about, first of all, the 10 million that you're talking about, probably more, you know, when it gets right down to it, people who are, you know, elderly people who are really living in poverty. And it's not like they can go out and, you know, get a job or something. I mean, they're old and many of them are sick and they're living on virtually nothing. I mean, it's just, it is not enough money. I know some of these people, you know, it's like, oh my God, you know, they are, and they're dependent on a bunch of services anyway, which would be, you know, alleviated by just basically giving them a fairly decent safety net income in their, you know, in their golden years. And on a political level, this makes sense because, you know, there are a lot of poor elderly baby boomers out there, many of whom are probably dumbly voting for Republicans. Well, this is basically saying to them, hey, who's looking out for you here? It's not them. And it isn't them, because I can guarantee you, and they're already talking about it, that if Donald Trump wins re-election, that they are going to go after entitlements again, or what they call entitlements. I hate that word. And it's they're already talking about it because, you know, the deficit, you know, will become a new issue. They are going to, especially if they win back the House, which doesn't look promising for them, but nonetheless, they're going to try to do it because they you know are going to be facing tremendous blowback from their, you know, rich donors over this deficit. And that is going to be the kind of thing that we're going to have a major battle for. So the best way and the best political way to go about this is to, you know, put this into the campaign and let's have it out on that. Because I don't think, you know, Donald Trump has said, he says a lot of things, and this is one thing, you know, I will never touch Social Security or Medicare. But, you know, nobody believes a word that guy says anymore. And they've got people like, you know, his cronies, Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell there. They're definitely talking about, about doing something with entitlements again. And, they, you know, if the Democrats can get that into the campaign, it's politically smart, because I think that it does show that they're, you know, people have always trusted Democrats on Social Security more than they trust Republicans, and for good reasons, because Republicans have been trying to repeal it since the day it was enacted. So they have a lot to go for. And I think that, you know, that's the kind of thing. We've been down this road. That fight's been had over and over and over again. And the smartest thing the Democrats did was take the tack, hey, we're not going to be fighting this defensive war anymore. Social Security is inadequate. We're going to start talking about expanding it. And I think that happened right during the, or perhaps right after that assault on the program in 2005, right after the election, George Bush's reelection, and they went hard after it. You remember that battle?
Yep.
And I think that they that wisely the Democrats and the activists on that issue decided, hey, we're not going to be defensive on this anymore. It's time to go the other direction. And I think that's starting to pay off.
Yep. Well, I remember just like how absurd the idea was considered, and folks can go over to Atreos's blog he had written a couple of USA Today opinion pieces, I think, at one point that, you know, really set some people off on that. But
that's right.
But all right. So let's turn back to the debate. I want to start with this one. I mean, we'll get more into the specifics of the issues, but this clip with Joe Biden, to me, is basically there's two clips that define what I think is the problem with Joe Biden in my mind. And I'm even divorcing this from policy on some level, just from strictly from a political standpoint. One of them is the Julian Castro one. We'll play that in a bit. And the reaction to it that we saw from sort of the establishment Democrats, right? Or at least, you know, some of the sort of conventional wisdom voices, that it was too tough and blah, blah, blah. But the other one, this clip here, is the one that scares me the most about Joe Biden, because if you believe, and I don't know where you are on this, but if you believe, like I do, that this election is going to be one about mobilization versus persuasion, that the efforts in persuading people and the cost associated with what it does to the potential voters you could get is not worth it. That you need to go after voters who stayed home in 2016. And there's going to be, obviously, Donald Trump's strategy is going to be to depress the Democratic vote turnout. And it won't be just coming from him. Nobody's going to buy Donald Trump's, notion of racial justice or whatnot. But the reality is there's no doubt in my mind that Hillary Clinton's super predator remarks, regardless of whether, without having to litigate, whether it was fair or unfair to bring it up or this and that, that hurt her. And it was a weakness that was exploited. When you listen to Joe Biden answer this question, multiple things come up. His perspective on race, his perspective on poor people, and just like his ability to answer a question coherently are all, I think, in play in this question. Here it is. This is a question that's asked. What is the name of the ABC? He's asked. I don't know what her name is, but one of the ABC people asked him this question, quoted him, and the quote in and of itself is bad enough. The answer was even worse.
I want to come to you and talk to you about inequality in schools and race. In a conversation about how to deal with segregation in schools back in 1975, you told a reporter, "I don't feel responsible for the sins of my father and grandfather. I feel responsible for what the situation is today, for the sins of my own generation, and I'll be damned if I feel responsible to pay for what happened 300 years ago." You said that some 40 years ago. But as you stand here tonight, what responsibility do you think that Americans need to take to repair the legacy of slavery in our country?
Pause it for 1 second. Now, Heather, I mean, you tell me. I mean, I think that's a fair question. She really set it up in such a way of like, that was 40 years ago. I accept that your attitude towards this may have changed. But frankly, you know, if somebody said that today, it would be a right winger would be saying that.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that is the idea that like, I don't have to pay. Well, no, you don't have to pay. Society has to pay. You're part of society. We do that all the time. Right. Like if in a municipality, the police arrest somebody illegally and they're sued, we all pay for the compensation that, you know, because our apparatus did something that was wrong and people deserve to be recompensated. I mean, this is a very easy concept to grasp. So he's given the opportunity to basically say, I've evolved, or, you know, that was taken out of context, whatever it is. But this is the jibber jabber he comes up with. And I don't know. He smiled when she started this question. I don't know if it was why he did that, if it was just a nervous smile or like, I knew this was coming, or I don't know what was behind that. But here it is.
Americans need to take to repair the legacy of slavery in our country.
Well, they have to deal with look, there is institutional segregation in this country. And from the time I got involved, I started dealing with that. Redlining. Banks, making sure that we are in a position where, look, we talk about education. I propose that what we take is those very poor schools, the Title I schools, triple the amount of money we spend from $15 to $45 billion a year. Give every single teacher a raise to the equal raise of getting out of the $60,000 level. Number two, make sure that we bring in to help the teachers deal with the problems that come from home. The problems that come from home, we have one school psychologist for every 1,500 kids in America.
All right, pause it for 1 second. So here, Biden goes, I mean, right? This is not some guy who it's the first debate he's ever been in. This is stunning that he doesn't have the ability to answer this question with any type of coherence. But aside from the fact that he's not addressing slavery, aside from him just like trying to go down this idea of like, I fought segregation and realizing like, oh, wait, I shouldn't bring that up because I was praising segregationists, 6 weeks ago. Then he tries to pivot to education and he gets he immediately pivots from what are we going to do about slavery that affected African Americans to just the question of poverty. So he is now in his mind immediately goes to poor, people living in urban areas, which is a, you know, we're starting to get into like Daniel Moynihan territory here, which is very uncomfortable territory too, because A, not only does he gets the idea that our education problems are a function of poverty, but he then just basically says, but we've got to put it on the schools to deal with it because we need psychiatrists at the schools. And then he pivots to full on Moynihan territory where he basically starts blaming these poor people for their inability to do the right thing for their kids to go to school. And remember now, when he says poor people, he's saying black people in his mind because the question was about slavery. Good.
Come from home. We have one school psychologist for every 1,500 kids in America today. It's crazy. The teachers are recording. I'm married to a teacher. My deceased wife is a teacher. They have every problem coming to them. We have to make sure that every single child does, in fact, have 3, 4, and 5-year-olds go to school, not daycare, school. We bring social workers into homes of parents to help them deal with how to raise their children. It's not that they don't want to help. They don't know quite what to do. Play the radio. Make sure the television, make sure you have the record player on at night, the phone. Make sure the kids hear words. A kid coming from a very poor school, or a very poor background, will hear 4 million words fewer spoken by the time they get there.
I pause it. So,
oh my God.
Now, look, the question of a vocabulary deficit is a little bit controversial. I happen to believe, I don't think it's 4 million words, but the listening vocabulary of kids living in poverty is definitely lower. But the reason is not because their parents are home and not playing the records for them. It's because the parents are constantly dealing with poverty And either in the form of like, I've got multiple jobs or I can't afford to send my kid to the universal pre-K that I think he was trying to suggest. And I don't know that he has a UPK program, frankly. And he is just going full on saying that these people don't know how to raise their children. Now, remember, he's talking about black people. That was the question.
I found that to just be just stunning. I mean, first of all, you know, going back in time, back to the mid 70s, when we go back to the original quote that the interrogator asked him there, the interviewer asked him, that was the way that the liberals spoke in those days. And you mentioned Moynihan, and it comes from that. There was this whole school of thought, you know, about the tragedy of the black family and how it was just, a bunch of women were in charge and they were, they didn't know how to raise their kids and people had to go in and help them. I mean, what that answer showed was that Biden is still in that mindset. Yeah. To a certain extent, he has not evolved. Not really. I mean, I'm not. You know, it's there's this condescension in that, in which he's just giving no credit to the people who are, in these situations, trying desperately to raise their kids. My best friend is a school teacher in Baltimore, and basically, she teaches a lot of kids that are in poverty. And I'm telling you, those parents are involved. This is absolute nonsense what they're saying. These are people who are struggling because they're working two jobs, yep. Three jobs, not because they don't care about their kids and they're doing everything they can. This is absolutely ridiculous. It's offensive, and even more so when you consider what he was responding to this question about, it was basically about reparations, right? I mean, that was the introduction to that topic. And his answer to it was, we need to teach these people how to, raise their kids. And he didn't do the one thing that Joe Biden should be able to do. I mean, I don't think he's a racist, in the sense that, he has some hostility toward black people. He's a racist in that old-fashioned sense of sort of this noblesse oblige, right? We need to help these poor people. They really don't know what they're doing kind of thing. And that's just as bad. It's another form of racism. And he is unable to sort of extricate himself from that. That moment was there for him to say, look, my values are this. I love all people. I care about, everyone. I've been fighting for everyone to have a better way of life since I entered politics. That's why I did it. And my attitudes about, African Americans and poverty and all of that back in the mid-70s was wrong. And I have changed, and I am, through the help of, he could evoke his good friend Barack Obama if he wanted to. Say, I've learned a lot, but he just can't seem to do it. And it's intensely frustrating.
I could come up with literally a million answers to that, all of which start with like, look, I don't know about reparations, but we as a society have a responsibility, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of different ways he could have answered that question. And not only has he not evolved, like he's not even aware that the rest of the world has evolved. He obviously is not listening to any advisors. And even if he has so little answer for that, that he goes, he's not only being racist, he also has like no real genuine understanding of the struggles of people who are living in poverty. Like I am just sort of, he has no sense of that structural issues, right? Like aside from conflating black people with poor people, he also has no sense of poverty. And he also doesn't seem to have a sense of education. I mean, there are multiple concepts here, like sort of policy silos that he's getting completely off base with incredibly antiquated perspectives on. And he delivered all that in a nearly incomprehensible ramble. And
well,
then,
it's funny.
Wait,
I'm sorry.
The incomprehensible ramble doesn't stop here. This is the let's continue to play out this clip because he is so shook by his inability to answer this question that he goes off into la la land.
Make sure the television, make sure you have the record player on at night, the phone. Make sure the kids hear words. A kid coming from a very poor school, a very poor background, will hear 4 million words fewer spoken by the time they get there.
Thank
so
you, Mr.
much.
President.
I'm going to go like the rest of them do, twice over, okay? Because here's the deal. The deal is that we've got this a little backwards. And by the way, in Venezuela, we should be allowing people to come here from Venezuela. I know Maduro. I've confronted Maduro. Number two, you talk about the need to do something in Latin America. I'm the guy that came up with $740 million to see to it those three countries, in fact, change their system so people don't have a chance to leave. You're all acting like we just discovered this yesterday.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Secretary Castro.
Now, what? he says, I'm going to get the double the time that everybody else did. You got this all backwards, he says at that point. Like, I don't know, like, what he's talking about. I feel like that moment where he goes like, no, you got it all backwards. I wonder what he was talking about there, because he's mad. And it's like, there was something super weird going on in his head at that point. You got this all backwards. And then apparently he felt like, I completely aced that whole question about slavery and what we should be doing for black/poor people that I've invented in my head. But that is, wow, right? And I'm also amazed that, like, that's not the headline of every single paper in the country.
It is very strange to me. I have to admit, when I woke up this morning and saw everybody saying, yeah, Biden had a pretty good night, I'm kind of, are you kidding? I mean, I thought he had a particularly bad night. I mean, even worse than he was before. Yeah. I mean, I didn't think this was particularly good for him at all. And in that particular, that exchange was probably the worst moment, I think, of the night for him. But two things that struck me about this. Number one is, if he gets the nomination, I think we're all going to go, oh, right, whatever. It looks like we're going to have it's going to be like the worst campaign in history of watching these two guys, Trump and Biden, just do what they do for 6 months. It's going to be awful. And I am not looking forward to the idea of having to make excuses day after day after day for Joe Biden's gaffes. I don't want to do it. I'd rather have him be president than Trump. Of course, I'd rather have virtually anybody, Richard Nixon's corpse, anybody, than Trump. But this is really, really disturbing. The idea that this guy could end up being the nominee, and we're going to have to, deal with all of this stuff, because there's no need for it. There are other candidates who are great. There's plenty of talent in the Democratic lineup there that we saw there last night, and there's no reason for it. So that's one thing. I mean, the other thing is that I do believe that he was confused. I think he got lost. I don't know what was in his head in that moment. But, if one were to be cynical, if one were to look at this from a purely political strategic standpoint, it kind of makes some sense for Biden to be saying these sort of quasi-racist things and to be kind of being this old guy, from the past. If there was somebody out there who was thinking, if you want to bring back some of those white working class voters who voted for Trump, but maybe they voted for Obama in the past, this kind of stuff may be the thing that appealed to them. After all, they voted for Trump, and he's as incoherent as it gets. And, Biden in some ways is kind of one of them, right? I mean, I'm talking about the older, white working class people in Pennsylvania out in the middle of nowhere, upset about manufacturing and all the rest of this stuff. I don't think that's the case with Biden. I think he truly is just like that. He's always been like that a bit. He's worse than he used to be, but he's always been like that a bit. But, from a strategic standpoint, you can kind of see some logic in it, and that is very, very disturbing. Because going there, this point in the Democratic Party, is a very, very, very bad idea.
Well, I mean, but that is, I can see a strategy, but I think that's a bad strategy. And I think it's a bad strategy because I think it misinterprets what the terrain is. Because that strategy, you're basically saying, we're going to get more of those people who voted for Trump the first time then we would depress the vote that we had in terms of last time. That
right.
I'm going to go out there and make this case that I am at least somewhat friendly, you know, whatever, however you want to define, you know, whatever you want to define that concept. I'm not as offensive to the racists as, you know, somebody who might be, you know, a non-normal president, right? Like a non-white, old white guy president.
Right.
But the problem is that, and this is not a gaffe, and I, you know, I went back and forth a little bit with Bill Scheer on this, is that this is not a gaffe. And despite the fact that Joe Biden is leading it with African Americans, it's quite possible that those African Americans that he's leading with are reliable voters. And the cohort of unreliable voters, white, black, Latino, they hear stuff like that and they don't come out to vote. And that is the major dilemma with a guy like Joe Biden. You can't tell right now how much he's going to depress the vote. And like you say, this is going to be an election where it's going to be in many respects like the Clinton Trump thing, but more of like two candidates who are basically just racing to the finish line with the least amount of unfavorable. And that's basically what happened with Clinton and with Trump. And it just so happened that she was slightly more unfavorable in the wrong areas, and just people didn't come out. Now, maybe they'll come out regardless of who the nominee is, but Joe Biden has a risk, I think, associated with him that no other candidate does in this Democratic field. And I mean literally no other candidate.
I agree with you. And, you know, the thing, you know, I mean, I look, as I said earlier, I will, you know, I'll back him if that's what it takes. But it's not, I'm not looking.
But you and I would vote for, you and I would go to vote literally for a can of soup if it was
going
to be.
And there are plenty of us.
There's plenty of us.
There aren't enough.
But there's not enough.
You're not going to tell, like, young people, for instance, who are, you know, for them, they haven't been through this war as we have. And they're still, you know, they're idealistic. And they look at this and go, hey, you know, I want something better. And I don't blame them. I felt the same way when I was young. You know, this wasn't something that I was just going to, you know, I wasn't some party line kind of person. I mean, I'm different now. I'm older, been through a lot, you know, and I'm not going to even try to convince anybody of that because it's not, you know, it's impossible. This is just the way it is. And the Democrat, there's no excuse for it. It's not as if he's the only person out there. Look at these other people who we haven't even talked about yet. I mean, you know, there was a whole lineup of people there who have an argument for being the nominee of the Democratic Party in a way that is not only unifying for the party, but is inspiring for a whole bunch of people who may not normally vote. And, you know, I could see them getting out there. I have no problem making an argument for them, for a whole bunch of them. You know, that I could say, you know, let's, you know, this is the Democratic Party of the future. This is what we believe in. We don't want to, you know, go back. You know, both Biden and Trump are throwbacks. And the world that they are, you know, talking about, and Biden less so than Trump. I think he wants to go back to the 50s. I think Biden just wants to go back a few years to the Obama era. But either way, that time has passed. And, you know, in order to make young people enthusiastic about politics and make them feel that they have a stake in the whole thing, you got to look to the future. That's their life. You know, that's what they're trying to put together. And I just don't think Joe Biden speaks to that. And, you know, and he doesn't, and to the extent that he speaks to anything, he's doing it very, very badly. And I just, really, is this the best we can do? I mean, come on.
Let's talk about, just briefly, I mean, we're not going to get to nearly as much as I had wanted to, but I don't know. I mean, do we need to go over the false choice of taxes and cost and healthcare? I mean, it was sort of interesting to watch both Warren and Bernie deal with that clip. With that question, let's go to that. You mentioned that Venezuela question about Maduro, and the that then turned into like really the one of the most ridiculous talking points to hear mouth. I mean, this is that, you know, Bernie Sanders wants to turn America into Venezuela. And Bernie came back with, I think, what is the best construction to deal with this question of democratic socialism. But here is that question. Jose Ramos, Michael, to his credit, had predicted that Jose would bring up Venezuela in this way. And it was Jorge, rather, would bring it up in this context. And he did almost on cue.
Previous debate. So let's begin. Senator Sanders, one country where many immigrants are arriving from is Venezuela. A recent UN fact-finding mission found that thousands have been disappeared, tortured, and killed by government forces in Venezuela. You admit that Venezuela does not have free elections, but still you refuse to call Nicolás Maduro un dictador, a dictator. Can you explain why, and what are the main differences between your kind of socialism and the one being imposed in Venezuela, Cuba, and Nicaragua?
Well, first of all, let me be very clear. Anybody who does what Maduro does is a vicious tyrant. What we need now is international and regional cooperation for free elections in Venezuela so that the people of that country can make and can create their own future. In terms of democratic socialism, to equate what goes on in Venezuela with what I believe is extremely unfair. I'll tell you what I believe in terms of democratic socialism. I agree with what goes on in Canada and in Scandinavia, guaranteeing health care to all people as a human right. I believe that the United States should not be the only major country on earth not to provide paid family and medical leave. I believe that every worker in this country deserves a living wage and that we expand the trade union movement. I happen to believe also that what, to me, democratic socialism means is we deal with an issue we do not discuss enough, Jorge, not in the media and not in Congress. You got three people in America owning more wealth than the bottom half of this country. You got a handful of billionaires controlling what goes on in Wall Street, the insurance companies, and in the media. Maybe, just me, maybe, what we should be doing is creating an economy that works for all of us, not 1%. That's my understanding of democratic socialism.
Secretary Augusto, do you want...
I mean, I think that is, you know, that was a gift on some level. I don't think that's what Jorge Ramos meant it to be, but it was a gift for Bernie Sanders to be able to basically lay out the broad strokes of his vision for what, you know, what should happen in America. And I'm just sort of shocked at that question, though, to be honest with you. I mean, I can see, like, why don't you call him a dictator? Because, you know, I don't know, the words tyrant seem, you know, sufficient. There may be a technical reason why he doesn't call him a dictator. I don't know. But that to me is silly. But the other one is even sillier. Heather, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were.
The second question was even sillier. But I thought he knocked it out of the park there.
Oh, he absolutely did. It was really one of the best answers of the night. I mean, to me, that one and Beto O'Rourke's passionate and bizarrely, for politics, honest answer about, you know, confiscating AR-15s, I thought were the two best moments of the debate. You can see why young people particularly and others of the left like Sanders so much from that answer, because that's very, very clear. It's not, you know, there's no obfuscation there. There's no kind of, you know, overly pedantic sort of details in it. It's just a straight up explanation of what he believes and why he believes that this is important for America. You know, there's plenty to disagree with or agree with or whatever, but it's out there, and he said it, and he said it in a way that I think was important in the debate. I mean, I think I've heard a lot of sort of performance criticism on Sanders, and I guess that's legitimate. I mean, part of this is a performance, but really, his answer on that, I think, was particularly important in sort of setting the parameter of how to deal with that Venezuela situation. I mean, this is going to be a big thing in the campaign. This is not the last we're going to hear about, not just Sanders, but all the Democrats. Probably they'll say it about Joe Biden, too,
right,
that they want to turn America into Venezuela. And this is the way to answer that, if you are in a position to answer it that way. I mean, I think Sanders can. I think Warren can. I think there are others probably there who could take that tack, although perhaps not saying democratic socialism in those words, but can sort of make that case. But they're going to have to do it, and they should listen to him in the way that he puts that, because it's very compelling. I mean, I think even if you're not a democratic socialist, you have to listen to that and go, he's right. And as, particularly when he gets to the kicker at the end, where he says, you know, three people have more money than the bottom half of the country. That's startling and shocking statistic, and it's extremely important to continue to get that out there. And, you know, both he and Warren do that in different ways. And some of the others sort of, you know, push that as well. And at times you'll hear Booker or Beto or others sort of say that. But that's a very, very important thing. And I thought he did it very well. It's the best I've ever heard him do it in a big national sort of forum like that.
Yeah, I thought that was a very tight response. And I wish he had said up front, like, I have laryngitis. Like, I just wish he had said that at the beginning of the debate. But all right, let's just do the Beto clip as well, because this was pretty impressive. And I think this is Beto realizing, like, I'm not running for Senate in Texas. I may not have much of a, you know, statewide future in Texas, at least for the time being. And so I'm going all in on this. And of course, I think he was genuinely moved by the events that have taken place in Texas over the past 6 weeks.
Battlefield. If the high impact, high velocity round, when it hits your body, shreds everything inside of your body, because it was designed to do that, so that you would bleed to death on a battlefield and not be able to get up and kill one of our soldiers. When we see that being used against children. And in Odessa, I met the mother of a 15-year-old girl who was shot by an AR-15. Mm-hmm. And that mother watched her bleed to death over the course of an hour because so many other people were shot by that AR-15 in Odessa and Midland. There weren't enough ambulances to get to them in time. Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. We're not going to allow it to be used against our fellow Americans anymore.
And just to make the point here, somebody found this guy, Drew McKevitt. I don't know who he is. Found an ad from an NRA magazine in 1962. The Armalite AR-15 rifle. It is a complete report on a 22 caliber rifle being offered for military purposes. I mean, this is what it was designed for. And, you know, the NRA knew what it was back in 62. They understood what it was, as they wrote about it in the American Rifleman.
I like how one sentence is just two words, NATO caliber.
Right.
Oh. You know, that, well, that moment, you know, it actually moved me, and I can't say that much in politics moves me anymore. I found that very moving, and it was obviously because Beto, the passion shone through, and he was saying something that people are saying all over the country, that millions and millions of people say is common sense, right? That these weapons should not be in the hands of civilians, that it's outrageous that we have them. Other countries don't have them. This is not some, it's not something, it's not a God-given right to have a semi-automatic weapon. There is no reason that people need those for any other purpose than for mass killings and, I don't know, showing off to your friends when you go to Starbucks or whatever your reasons are, none of which are rational and reasonable. And the fact that a politician said that, in fact, I think I tweeted somebody last night when I was watching it, you know, I've been waiting 20 years for somebody to say that, to somebody just come out and say it. They've done it in other countries. They did it in Australia. They've done it in other countries. There is no, you know, rational reason why that can't be done other than this, you know, completely ridiculous gun culture that we have and the NRA and its influence on, but, you know, members of both parties, although that seems to be bifurcating now, and it's really concentrated in the Republican Party, and the NRA is in disarray, although I'm not sure that the gun rights movement is, you know, going to be defanged simply if the NRA goes away, but we'll have to wait and see. But I thought that was a brilliant moment, and I think it does, you know, it speaks to the value of somebody just saying, you know, just speaking from the heart in politics. It's rare. You just don't see it very often. I mean, in a way, I think Sanders did that, you know, as we just discussed, with his definition of democratic socialism. Warren does it when she's talking about, you know, I think middle class, the middle class squeeze and the families, there's some real passion there. And Beto did it on that and on racism as well. I mean, he took both of those issues. I think those are going to be something that he'll be working on after he, you know, now that he's blown himself up in Texas politics. I mean,
right.
He's not going to get anywhere with that. But he'll be doing something along those lines and obviously feels very passionate about it. And it was really good to see. I mean, I think, you know, that's the kind of thing. Now, if, you know, it's the kind of thing that if Democrats were like Republicans, they would say that they just made the Republican gun-toting snowflakes cry, right? I mean,
right.
They're drowning in conservative tears. I mean, that would be – but Democrats don't look at it that way. It's not done to troll the Republicans. It's done because it comes from a very real and authentic sense of total outrage and frustration that we're dealing with these mass killings and that we're dealing with gun violence in general.
Right.
I mean, it's just it's reaching this point where people are just, you know, they are just absolutely appalled that we're dealing with it. And I think Beto voiced that very effectively.
I will note that I saw a clip of Chris Coons on some morning show this morning bemoaning the fact that Beto said this.
Oh,
and, you know, and folks, keep an eye on Chris Coons, because
yep.
if you ever missed, you know, who was
Joe
it?
Lieberman?
Joe Lieberman. Well, I give you Chris Coons. He's
yeah.
going to be there. He's going to be the guy who's giving us the problem with the filibuster, with guns,
yep.
everything else. Chris Coons is the latest in. He wants the fulcrum seat, as it were. But
I'm sorry. I really got to say something about this. You know I love me some sad Beto, right? Anytime he looks like he's going to cry, that just really does it for me. But the framing of this answer, and I'm sure he wasn't thinking about it because most of them don't, whereby weapons of war are fine to use on the battlefield, on people in other countries, but not here in the U.S., just really sets my teeth on edge. Like, nobody should be gunned down by an AR-15, no matter where they live, you know?
But you're not saying that people should be shot by single bolt action in war. You just don't think there should be war.
Well, yeah, and we can stop selling arms to countries like Saudi Arabia that are using them to conduct horrible massacres.
Right. But, I mean, it's not just that you have a problem with that specific gun that he's talking about.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
just you just don't think there should be we should be fighting wars, which I think is I think the idea is that it's a separate issue silo. And I think, yes, it would be nice if there was none of these guns whatsoever. I think certainly the first step in, let's say like even tobacco. Right. Like what's happened with tobacco is we have more or less made it not used in this country. And they have basically just focused all on using it, you know, selling it overseas. And I think it's evolutionary, but I don't know.
It is connected. Violence abroad is certainly connected to violence at home. When
yeah.
we look at these mass shootings and the reasons behind them, we have to look at the violence of our society.
Yes. And I would also even expand it to, you know, we should get rid of all guns because 30,000 suicides a year. I don't know what percentage of them could be stopped. Probably well more than half if people didn't have access to guns. And they're certainly not using AR-15s to kill themselves. They're using handguns, or maybe they're using a shotgun or something like that. But within the context of this, you know, getting some movement, I mean, you know, I take your point, but I'm not sure in that moment, like it's going to be more effective in getting rid of AR-15s in our society to say we shouldn't have guns or war.
Well, and that move is used more egregiously, I think, by Buttigieg, who uses it as a way to point out his military service.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
He is in there definitely trying to say, like, I've handled these things, and I just want to remind everybody I went to war. Digby, any last words? We didn't get through nearly a portion of what I had hoped to, but I think, like, you know, the big takeaway, honestly, is that, I mean, it, you know, as someone who desperately wants a Democrat to win the presidency, I mean, over Donald Trump, my biggest concern today is Joe Biden winning the Democratic primary. Like, I just, you know, the way that they came out, where Rahm Emanuel is sitting there and Heidi Heitkamp are the two ABC Democrats who are, I mean, seriously, this is bad stuff. And
well, over on MSNBC, they had Claire McCaskill. She's the one who's, you know, they bring in. I mean, it's not just her, but she's among them. I'm kind of really, I mean, what, you know, how is this really?
Why not Joe Biden?
I mean, you know, and look, like I said, my takeaway from this is, look, I mean, and I'll make no bones about it. My personal choice at this moment for the nomination is Elizabeth Warren. I've loved her for many years. I'd say love, not in a, you know, in the sense I don't really love politicians, but I've admired her for many years. I've met her. I think she's terrific, and I think she'd make a great president. But like you and like most Democrats, you know, I will vote for anything, you know, a can of soup, as you put it, you know, against Donald Trump. He is an existential threat to everything that I care about. I mean, look what he's doing on a daily basis. So that's not really in question. But I really, really do dread having to go through a campaign listening to these two old white guys, Trump and Biden, you know, just make a hash out of everything that we care about, you know, in terms of politics, inability to articulate anything that makes sense. Honestly, I think that Biden being the nominee is going to further degrade what Trump has already taken great strides to degrade in our politics, which is just coherence, reason, you know, the idea that any of this makes sense, that it's something beyond some sort of entertainment spectacle. I mean, that is what we're going to have. It's like these two old guys fighting it out incoherently on the national stage, and I dread it. I mean, we need somebody who can actually speak to what is going on, bring us back to reality, remind America that this is not the kind of leadership that we can have. It's a superpower. Whether we like it or not, the United States is still the most powerful nation on earth. Maybe it shouldn't be, but it is. And it's dangerous for everyone on this planet to not have rational leadership. Right. You know, even George W. Bush was more rational than what we're hearing coming out of both Biden and Trump at the moment. So I really, really hope that it doesn't come to that. I mean, I'll go with it if we have to, but I really don't. I really hope that's not the way it goes.
Like Digby said, I think is what the old phrase was. Appreciate the time, Heather. We will talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Thanks, Sam. Have a good weekend.
We'll go over more of some of these clips. The ones that stick out, of course, for me are not just when Julian Castro said, did you forget your own plan from what you said 2 minutes ago to Biden? But actually the substance of that question was really important because Biden actually did forget his own plan.
Also the part before that where Bernie's like, we'll be spending less. And Biden's like, but we're America. We should be spending more.
Oh, right. Exactly.
Jesus Christ.
Completely, completely.
We have the biggest, most bloated, blood-sucking healthcare system in the world.
Because of
America.
Yeah,
baby.
All right. But in the meantime, before we get there, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk to Chris James of Not Even a Show, famous for his artistry in prank calling right-wing talk shows. Quick break. Be right back.
cruise control. Babies in Reno with the vitamin D. Got a couple of couches, sleep on the love seat. Someone came saying I'm insane to complain about a shotgun wedding and a stain on my shirt. Don't believe everything that you breathe. You get a parking violation and a maggot on your sleeve. So shave your face with some mace in the dark. Saving all your food stamps and burning down the trailer park. Yo. Cut it. So
all right, we've changed a plan. In lieu of usually, like, I'll call during the break and bring on one of these things, but I'm gonna give it. It's been a while for me, but I certainly have been known to do some in my past.
Hello, Gullible Rube Industries. Chris speaking.
Yeah. Do you have Prince Albert in the can?
Oh, no. It's one of these classic pranksters.
Oh. No, it's real. I'm curious. I'm looking for some tobacco that was sold in the 30s.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're not even really a good one. Okay.
Chris, it's actually Sam Cedar. I'm sorry.
Way to say yes, Chris.
That's all right. Thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. I know you already talked about the debate, but I'm excited to talk a little politics with some fellow politic heads.
Oh, good. All right. Well, we'll do that. But before we do that, we have to go through basically what you do, because it's fantastic. This is it's a great era for something like this to happen. Like, in the past, there have been people who have done stuff like this. I have done one or two myself of this type of stuff, but you have made it into a show, the not even a show, but and it's pretty amazing. Well, I just want to play a couple of clips to show people we can talk about this. This is Kurt Schilling. And we just
know, to be honest, if you play any of the clips from my YouTube, I might have to DMCA you, but
we'll speed it up so that your algorithm can't find it.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, what? Well, I'm not sure. What are you going to play?
Okay, we're going to play first. This is show episode one, I guess, back in 2017, where you called in Kurt Schilling, I guess, at this time. I didn't know. Maybe he still has one, but he had a show?
Yeah, on Breitbart, Breitbart.com. That was the first show I ever called, was Kurt Schilling. I came across it on Twitter, and he was just sort of doing it on Periscope. But it was just him in his house, you know, sort of doing a show. But yeah, it was on Breitbart.
Now, had you decided to do a show yet, or were you just like, God, this guy, I got to call in and just mess with him?
Well, I'm a stand-up comedian. That's what my background is. So I'm a stand-up comedian, and I sort of decided I don't really want to be a stand-up comedian. I don't want to tour around. So I have to look for something that I can do at home, and I really love editing. I love, like, what Vic Berger, DJ Doug Pound on Tim and Eric, they're sort of taking footage and making it funnier just with editing.
Right.
So I became really obsessed with that, and I started looking at ways of getting footage. I came across, so I had it in mind that I was doing a channel. I also had an idea before that to do a Twitter account, where basically we organize pranks, large pranks. So it would be like an account that would have whatever, however many followers, and we'd say, okay, today we're calling Hannity and everyone's going to say this. But I couldn't get it off the ground cause I had no followers and nobody cared. So I just started the channel.
Well, it's going to happen. We're going to do this. But in the meantime, here is Kurt Schilling. Now, I have to say, Kurt Schilling, for me, obviously, there's some pleasure in watching this, but there's also some pain. I'm not going to lie. Schilling, part of the 04 team where the Red Sox won the World Series after, what was it, 80-some-odd years? I can't even remember now how long the curse was. But here is Kurt Schilling.
Well, let's start with a clip where he busts him on Kurt attributing Muslim attack on Muslims when they weren't them. So we just kind of get the flavor.
Okay, we'll get the flavor first.
What didn't you get? Huh? Clean your ears. Clean your ears out, big boy.
All right. Hey, Kurt, how are you doing?
Good. What's on your mind,
man? Big fan of yours. You look fat as shit today, but I love you, man.
That's funny. Okay. Are you calling in for something?
No, I was just calling in. I'm a really big fan of yours. I'm racist and I'm homophobic. And
right. No, actually, sort of you're Californian. You don't need to go with all those. Just say you're Californian. That covers all those. Okay, what else? What else you got for me, Chris?
Oh, am I still there?
No, yeah, we haven't hung up. Go ahead. Come on. Go ahead. Come on. Go ahead. Come on.
Oh, sorry. It's usually hang up.
No, we don't hang up.
I'm really scared all the time, and I'm always looking for outlets as far as like things that I can point to for why my life is not successful.
Again, you don't need to explain those things. Dude, you don't need to explain those things. Just say you're liberal. That covers it all.
I'm not liberal. I'm a conservative. I'm a big fan of yours.
There's nothing conservative about you. You're a coward and a fraud because you can't call in with anything to debate or talk about other than the fact that you're a dumbass. Well, anyway, go ahead.
I'm not a coward.
Sure you are.
I'm not a coward.
Sure you are.
A cowardly move would be to say that I'm running for Senate my wife and have her not.
Okay, now one second here. I forgot that this is that wasn't the Muslim thing.
that was still pretty funny.
Yeah, that was when I remember that he said he was running for Senate, and then he said, all I have to do is ask my wife, and then he came out like 2 days later, and he's like, I will not be running for Senate.
Very alpha move.
I've been there. Let's go to the defamation stuff. Yeah, let's go to the defamation because this is pretty good, and I had a lot of respect for what your work, the work you did here, because you would not let this die. And
so this is Kurt making the mistake here.
Okay, this is later in the show. This is Kurt making what you write as a truly wonderful mistake.
Quote, Trump administration chose to defame me, Comey said. I didn't realize that fame was part of his appointment or his position. But apparently it was. So we're going to find out.
We should just be clear here. He doesn't know what the word defame means. He thinks it means removing his fame.
like a child, the way a child would think.
Right.
That's what it means.
I think if I said that to my six-year-old, like, what do you think defame means? Get rid of fame?
Yeah, like defang.
Right. But so you call in to just sort of talk to him about this.
I'm a big fan. I call in all the time.
I know. Not really a fan, but you do call in. But what?
I am a fan. I'm as much of a fan as anyone else. I listen to your show every single morning. I wake up for it.
Awesome.
It's 6 o'clock in the morning.
What's up?
I noticed last week you seemed to not really understand what the word defame means, and I was curious if you've figured out yet what the word means.
Yeah, it means to slander somebody, to slander somebody,
So why do you seem to feel like it has something to do with fame, though? Because you said, I don't know how you can defame somebody.
My question was, how can you defame somebody who isn't actually famous?
But you understand that you can by law, right?
Right, but if you're damaging somebody's reputation, then you're defaming them.
Yeah, but you understand that you can do that to someone who's not famous,
right?
Are
you not defaming somebody by damaging their reputation?
Yeah, that's what the word means. Nothing to do with fame.
Right, no, but you can. If somebody's famous and you damage their reputation, you're defaming them, right?
Yes, no, I know,
okay,
but if somebody's
well, then,
not
so
famous.
So you're the idiot that doesn't know what the word means. Find awesome? I think it's awesome that you spent your entire weekend worrying about my use of the word defame. That, to me, is funny. You got anything else?
Can I talk?
Sure.
So why did you say it had something to do with fame?
I said, how can you defame somebody who shouldn't be famous?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so that shows that you don't understand the word and that you're dumb.
Because you said, how can you defame someone who's not famous? Let me ask you something.
Who's
the dumbass that's up at 9 o'clock in the morning listening to somebody's show that they don't like?
Yeah, we can end that one there. Here.
Yeah, okay, but you don't end it there. Go ahead.
Yeah, you don't want to miss because right at the end, that was when I reminded him it was actually 6 a.m. for me because he doesn't understand how time zones work.
That is. Now, let me ask you this.
You're such an irritant.
Do you have a device or a system of spoofing your caller ID?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I had to, like, once I started calling more shows and they started to know my number. Right. Then I had to get a call spoofer to spoof my call, which I guess you're not actually allowed to really do.
I don't know about that.
No,
I...
in America, you're not. But I live in Canada, luckily, so there's really nothing that anybody can do about it.
Because back in the day, hypothetically, if I lived in America and I had done this, I would have used Italis at italis.com. But apparently you can't do that, so...
I use it's just a simple application. It's good. It records the calls and it allows me to change my number. Because, yeah, there's a lot of the hosts. Kurt doesn't do his show anymore. There's a lot of the hosts that stopped doing their shows since we've been up and running. But, you know, there's people like J.J. McCartney is a guy we regularly call. And I can just call back over and over again from different numbers. And he's got no one calling in. So he's just picking up my call after my call after my call. You know?
Well, so here we go. So 19 episodes later, in fact, now you published this on June 19th. So this is almost like a year and a half later.
This
right?
is four seasons and 19 episodes.
Oh, my later. God. So this is a long time later. Kurt Schilling.
But this is a best of clip, I should say.
Okay. Yeah. Kurt Schilling is it on the Howie Carr show? Is that what he's on?
Oh, yes. This is from an earlier episode. But yeah, he went on the Howie Carr show with a guest host, Steve something, who's like the producer. And I had already pranked him that day. So I had already pranked him at his home. And then he got into his car, drove to a studio. And then I pranked him on the show that he was a guest on as well.
Let's look at him on the guest.
Advice for you, number one. Number two, I admit it. I made a mistake. It was my mistake. That's no problem.
By the way, do you know what the word defame means yet?
Really? Are you serious? Waking up this early to call in for that one? My God.
We'll go to the phone lines again. Chris, you're next on this one with Steve and Kurt. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, hey. How are you today?
Good.
Can you ask Kurt a question for me? Kurt, are you there?
You can ask him yourself.
Go ahead, buddy.
Oh, hey, Kurt. I was just curious. Do you know, could you tell me the definition of the word defame?
Oh, this is some schmuck who calls into my show every day. I think he's Canadian. He's high every morning by 9:15. And he calls,
so he followed you here.
Right, he did. He followed me over here. And he has absolutely no like political awareness whatsoever, but he tries to like call in and ask about, because
we usually have good Canadians who call on the show. We've had a lot of Canadians who have really good calls. I had mentioned
we were talking about James Comey and somebody had said he was being, how do you defame somebody that isn't actually famous?
Oh,
and so he said, oh, you used the word defamed in the wrong sentence, in the wrong context. Like,
well, in
really
that case,
did?
I think you might have.
Right. No, I did.
We need to stop and marinate in that moment where first of all, I don't know why he felt so, you've got under his skin so badly. This is what I think is really impressive about what you're doing here is like you found something that reduced Kurt Schilling, the guy who like pitched through a bloody ankle, and you found something that stayed in his brain in such a way that he could not even let it go on a major regional radio show where he was like, oh, that's just some guy. I got a lot of trolls. What are you going to do? Blah, blah, blah. But he actually has to explain the whole thing to him. Wait, keep it up there because we got to keep going. And the host basically says, oh, yeah, you did get it wrong. Watch Kurt Schilling try and dig himself out of this hole with the host.
In that case, I think you might have.
Right. No, I did. But the point was to be funny. Right.
I get you, Kurt. Right. As someone who's also very funny, I understand. Sometimes people just don't get it.
Nope. See, and this is where I would do the Mitt Romney laugh if I was over on the board. But see, here's the thing is Grace obviously calls you a quasi-celebrity.
Right.
So you, all, by your understanding, could not be defamed.
Right. Right.
It's so good that even the host who brought him onto the show and presumably agrees with him on most stuff is just absolutely mocking the shit out of him. Love it. Yeah.
Like, not only are you stupid, but you're not even famous.
Yeah.
It's the best when they eat their own.
That's the thing that I like to do, and that's like with my channel what I've sort of focused on is honing in on one thing and just not letting it go. I found that's sort of the best way to drive the hosts crazy. And there's like J.J. McCartney is the one I have a supercut of 3 hours, and we only ever call him about his shirt, and that's like sort of a well-known one.
Please, can you play some of that? please.
The idea was, though, I thought in my head, I thought, can I invent something? Can I invent something that has no meaning whatsoever? So it does. It's not even insulting. It's not bad. There's nothing to it. And just invent it from nothing and create a thing that now is the bane of his existence and drives him insane. And it worked 110%.
This guy. What's his name now? This is Jim J.J. McCartney.
J.J. McCartney. Yeah, he's in like Nebraska. He's an extremely right wing, like QAnon, false flag, really, truly disgraceful, you know, religious bigot, just a terrible, terrible guy.
And you've just picked the shirt randomly.
Yeah.
We're just going to pick up randomly. This is a three-hour supercut.
Three-hour supercut.
This is about 7 minutes into it.
Oh, my God.
In the attacks of 9/11, or say that a family member of yours was killed by a member of the Hell's Angels. What would
we're
it make
skip
you
a little
feel?
Ahead.
Trade, and I'm really worried that if China cuts out the trade altogether, then where are you going to get your cheap shirts from?
Yeah, you're so funny. Oh gosh, it's a real knee slapper. That's where you get, you know, folks. These people are, you know. They're clever, aren't they? 5-8-8-5-3-5-2-2-5-7. This one says it's Janice. Hello, Janice. Welcome to the show.
It's Janice. Sorry.
No, it's not. No, it's not, and you're not sorry, and I'm sorry, but I don't have time to waste. Folks, we've got so much going on in the world, and you know, we're just not going to play your games. You know, we. I mean, seriously, I got better things to do. Okay, let me go next. It says you're in Tennessee, but who knows? Hello, welcome to the show.
I told you not to mess with the Lock Gang.
Excuse?
I said don't mess with the Lock Gang.
I don't know what he means.
Chris, do you want to explain the Lock Gang a little
bit? What is the Lock Gang?
Well, the Lock Gang is, there was an old host that we used to call named Jim Lockwood, who was a blind lawyer in, I forget where, but, and we called him and we started a bit where we pretended to be a gang supporting him, and we would call other hosts and say, don't, you know, double cross Lockwood and the Lock Gang. It was sort of like in a way of mocking him, sort of. It became a big part, but he's one of the other hosts that's, he's gone now. He doesn't do a show anymore.
I mean, this is so fantastic. If YouTube had existed, when I was younger, I think basically, let's just skip ahead. I just want to see J.J. McCartney, like, you know, months into this.
You can see him years into it if you want.
Go.
Yeah. Huh. Okay.
We're sorry.
Welcome to the...
This is too complicated to explain, probably. He starts playing this weird clip that every time somebody calls, so it's going
to
move on.
I would never wish that on anybody else, that they would have to be you. And that's the bottom line. You never know. You just never know. Hello, you're on the J.J. McCartney Show. Not this one. Hang on. Got a little bit of a hitch in the giddy up. Don't go away. Stay with us. We're taking care of this, I promise. It's okay. Okay, now, caller, are you there?
Hi, JJ. This is David.
Yeah, David?
Hello?
I'm gonna give you 20 seconds to tell me why you're calling and what's going on. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, you mentioned earlier you were looking for news reports, and I was just saying that out here in California, there's a lot of stuff going on with George Soros right now. He's organizing a bunch of youth groups, and it's really worrying to me. They're indoctrinating all these kids, and I think the worst of them, have you heard of any of these? I think the worst one is Youth Bin.
No, I have not heard of Youth Bin. Tell me more.
That's because Youth Bin...
Yeah, see? I thought I was a moron.
Youth Bin... Pranked.
Nice.
That is my Prince Albert in the can, basically.
Yeah. It really is amazing to think that we've honestly called. There's genuinely 5 hours of material of calling this guy. I mean, I don't know why he kind of still does his show, to be honest, because the chat, he had to shut down his YouTube chat because it was 95% people from my channel just pretending to be other people. And honestly, 75 to 80% of the callers are us. So I don't get why it's still happening.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's fantastic, I think. I think that's fantastic. Like, have you come across anybody, and I sort of feel like, I'm aware of something, but have you come across a guy like this who, when you start calling, realizes, like, I'm just going to change the nature of my show and have it be a receptacle for prank calls?
I mean, that's essentially what Jim Lockwood did, the guy, the blind. And I forgot to mention about Jim Lockwood. He had swords hanging up behind him on his wall. So that was like a key thing. We would always call him about his swords, like as pretending we were just sword enthusiasts and we only wanted to talk about the swords. But yeah, definitely. I mean, there's been a lot of shows where they just stopped taking phone calls. They just decided, you know what, maybe we just won't be a call-in show anymore. Maybe we'll just talk for an hour or whatever. Like, there was one guy, there was a show called The Deplorables Radio. That was the name of the show. So you can imagine
right. What
it was. But I have a character named the Fat Master who, if there's like a really homophobic host, the Fat Master gets aroused by that and he calls in and watches the live stream and batches off, which is his way of saying jacks off. And this guy was the most homophobic dickhead ever on the Deplorables Radio. The Fat Master called him one single time and he just shut down the phone lines forever. Never took another call in his entire life.
That's fantastic.
Snowflakes.
Oh, that's so great. And so, So how many years have you been doing this?
Two and a half years, I want to say. Like I said, I'm a stand up. So, you know, I've been doing comedy for a long time. Right. And I grew up, you know, I watched Prank Yankers. I think you might remember, you know, and the Jerky Boys when I was a kid.
Yes.
Was like, it was when the Jerky Boys were, which is insane to think, they had like the number one album in North America as a prank calling duo. Which is just crazy to think of. That's like my formidable years. And then Sal and Richard as well on Howard Stern.
Sal and Tradio Richard are good.
Calls. Ah. Yeah, the Tradio calls and all that stuff. So I've been obsessed with sort of, you know, or I've had an interest in prank calling for a long time.
It's very, can you hear me, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very Tradio call-like. And the difference is that the Tradio calls that the Howard Stern guys do are incredibly funny, but you have to like, the hosts of Tradio are these very nice, hapless hosts, and these assholes from New York, these scumbags are bothering them in their nice little swap shop program. So it's really funny, but you have the same dynamic, except with the payoff of, oh, like it's a horrible person.
Well, that's the thing.
So it all works. It's like you don't have that. I love those pranks, but there's always a little twinge of like, oh, just leave them alone and let them like resell their tractor or whatever they're doing. But this has none of that. Please waste all of their time.
Yeah, that is really the beauty of it. It's like the Quentin Tarantino thing where it's like the villains are so bad that you can do whatever you want to them and nobody feels bad for them. So it works out really well where I can be really vicious to these people. Sometimes what I do have to do is, and people have told me in the past that I have to do, is sort of frame it a little bit, show a little bit of them talking and saying some of the really bad stuff.
Right.
You know, the thing is, it's a fine line because it's a balancing act. I don't want to put that out there on my channel and have too much of that actually, you know, I don't want people watching that. It's just bullshit. It sucks. But you know, I do want to frame it up a little bit to say, okay, I'm actually happy that this guy JJ is considering flying to Vancouver to try to kill you. You know, like that's actually funny to me because he's a monster. He has said that before a number of times. He sort of led on that, like, hey, I'm considering hiring somebody to kill you.
Oh my god! Probably not the best context in which to announce that.
That's
on
such
your
a great call,
show.
Though. Like, hey, JJ, I'm a hitman.
It's true. Yeah. Back in my early days,
I take Bitcoin.
In my early days of comedy, this guy, Carl Perry, and I, who was sort of like a legendary comedic influence on like Cross and those guys, but was very in his own world. We would call the production offices of this TV show called Cobra with Michael Dudikoff as if we were the Michael Dudikoff fan club and pitch different storylines as to like, we think that Michael could get involved with Christine, but if you're holding off for later in the episode, that's cool. And then it would be stuff like I would call and I'd say, listen, I just want you to know, because I don't want to be, I want to be upfront about this. We had to remove the president. It was perfectly, you know, a long parliamentary procedure. I am the acting vice president, but I do have authorization to make this call by a vote that I can send you the minutes if you need to see the minutes. And they would put us on speakerphone because they were all thinking like, these guys are insane. And the thing is, like, I think we recorded it, but we, it was that. That's the beauty of like this YouTube era, is that you can actually like do this stuff and show it to other people. We would just do it and then just, I don't know, get high and then laugh about it. Like we were, but we weren't 12. We were 25, I think.
Well, that's what a lot of the time I'll tell people, like, oh, I have a prank calling channel. And they're like, oh, yeah, I used to love doing prank calls when I was 9. You know, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I know. It's a bit childish.
But what you're doing is, on some level, I mean, it's like it is a form of political trench warfare. You are jamming their signal to the extent, like, what's the big, well, let's play this one here. This is this is the Fat Master.
You really need to call that guy.
I could find the Roger Stone.
That would be so funny.
This is the Roger Stone call. Yeah, this was. Okay. It's really hard to get on with InfoWars. I'm actually, in my head, as somebody who tries to prank call shows all the time, I'm convinced that Alex Jones doesn't have real callers to his show. Like, he never did. It was all sort of pre-done because, I mean, we've called thousands of times and never gotten even through to a screener. But yeah, we managed to get on this other show that Roger Stone was co-hosting.
That's interesting. I definitely know. I can I can assure you that in talk radio, people would put planted calls in. I was definitely aware that people would do that. But that's interesting. Maybe he never got any real calls at all. That's interesting.
Yeah.
But here is this is the Fat Master calling into Roger Stone.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
I just gotta say, that checkered tie, really digging it today, Roger. Really digging it.
I appreciate that. Coming from a man whose tie and whose pocket square are perfectly coordinated today.
It's a high compliment. Many thanks.
Well, thank you. And revealing the suspenders, too, after coming off the Jones show. A
big move.
All right, let's go out to the phone lines indeed. Your calls for Roger Stone or myself. Let's go to Chris in Florida as well. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, hey. Good afternoon, fellas. How are you?
We're great.
I'm excited to talk to Roger. A big fan of yours, Roger. I love you a lot. Love that you're on the live stream. You're looking good with those suspenders.
Thank you. It's kind of the Larry King look, but I wanted to change it up from the Alex Jones show.
You look a lot better than Larry King, sir. You look a whole lot better than Larry King.
Well,
no offense to him.
I'm at least 30 years younger, I think, but go ahead.
Yeah. You really look good.
Well, you are a fan, so go ahead with your question.
Yeah, my name's the Fat Master. I'm kind of a well-known figure, and I like to watch these radio shows, and I find the most handsome hosts, and I like to, I guess, batch off to them.
That's very interesting. Do you have a question for us today?
Yeah, my question is, have you ever heard of Jim Lockwood and the Lock Gang? Lock Gang, Lock Gang, Lock Gang, Lock
Gang, Lock Gang, Lock Gang. I cannot say that I have.
Chris, did you want to talk about South Korea and North Korea like it says on the board here, or are you just calling in for a good time?
I am having a good time jacking off, yeah.
All right, well, that's okay.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah,
I feel like Stone probably
took that well. I used to get nervous calling, you know, when I'd get on with a big person, and it doesn't happen as much now. It makes it a lot easier. Like on that call, I was really nervous, you know, to have gotten through.
You think Stone was sincerely flattered by that?
Yeah, I think he definitely was.
Yeah, that was the thing about it. When I did it, I realized afterwards that he wasn't the best target for that type of thing, because he's very open sexually, is the truth. You know, right. he had that cuck posting or whatever, right?
Right. I mean, you want to call into like someone who's very conservative, and it will creep them out that you
exactly.
are
exactly. Yeah, the idea of it, because the fact that they're on a camera and there's nothing they can do. Like, they could turn the camera off, I guess, but they're on a camera. They can't, you know, pick who's watching them or what that person's doing while they're watching them. It's a really sort of, you know, you're on a live stream right now. Isn't it a little uncomfortable to think of that?
A little bit, I guess. I mean, if you tell me that you are, I would say I'm not surprised. I think a huge percentage of our audience is probably doing the same. But
see, that's why pranking left-wing shows doesn't work as well. That's the reason. I mean, if you try to call them, and it's, you would just say something like that, and then it would be over, and it wouldn't be a great clip. You know,
we don't care if you jack off to us. In fact, we like it.
We actually are enrolled in an affiliate program where
if you're jerking off while you watch the Majority Report, be sure to let Credo Mobile know. There's a number you can text.
Exactly.
And it actually supports Planned Parenthood.
Use the coupon code Majority.
Use the coupon code Majority. Let them know you jerked off to us.
Let's watch with the Fat Master calling in on one of these homophobic radio hosts.
Oh, this is the Deplorable.
Yeah, let's just do this.
Oh, this is the one. This is the guy who never took another phone call.
He never took another phone call again.
Shut down his phone lines altogether.
The number here, I guess, I might have given the wrong number earlier, 202-838-0101. That's the call-in number. Someone tweeted me that maybe I gave the wrong one, which would not be the first time. I got a call here. This is Roger from Idaho. Let's go ahead and get his input on this. So, hey, Roger, how's it going?
Not too bad. How are you doing today?
Hey, good. So what's your comments? What's your thoughts on this?
Hey, a question. Is deplorable, is that a play on that comment that Hillary made?
Yeah, it actually was kind of going around before that, but then Hillary kind of helped codify it. Yes, that helped.
I told you.
Give us an answer. Give us a kind of a common banner for us people that the Democrats and the establishment don't like at all.
So you gave the wrong number out originally? That's kind of an important part of a call-in show.
It sure is. So do you have any input to the show?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Mitch McConnell.
Okay, sir.
Sorry. Is that you on the live stream?
It is.
Oh, cool. I like to call these shows, and then I guess I batch off while I watch.
Okay, so what about McConnell? What's your point?
Well, McConnell, I would never batch off to McConnell. No, he's not nearly as good looking as you.
These are what we call trolls.
And these are people that
have nothing better to do.
Thanks so much.
And thus ends his phone taking career phone call.
Yeah, he didn't say the thing, because it is really amazing. One thing that I've learned from calling all these different shows, it's amazing. Top to bottom, doesn't matter how big the show is, they all use the insult living in your mom's basement. It is just every single one says it. It's crazy how many. Dennis Prager, Gorka, like all the way down to JJ, every single one of them.
Now, we played a bunch of you calling in to like, Gorka.
Yeah, you could be like in the spare bedroom or something. Is that where you are in your mom's house?
Yeah, that's actually, I actually had my mom and dad call into the shows. So there's a clip where my dad calls Kurt Schilling and says that I live in the basement and he can't get me out of the basement. I refuse to leave. And Kurt's like, takes it seriously. And Kurt like talks to him father to father. Like,
did it occur to Schilling, like, how does this guy know what his son is doing in the bay? Like, how does this? I watch YouTube and I stumbled across your show and saw that my son called in, and I just wanted to tell you, I'm sorry, I'm trying. But we played a bunch of your Gorka stuff, where you would say, like, oh, my sister, she's a lib. She says that you're ugly and horrible and you're just despicable and dishonest.
That's my favorite prank. It's my favorite prank to do to the bigger shows. It's so great where you just position yourself as a huge fan who has a detractor within their life, and then it just gives you free rein to insult them just right to their face on their own radio show. Say the most insulting things you can think of, you know?
And do you have like a favorite persona you use when you talk to screeners? Do you have any screeners? I mean, folks want to do this. Some of these shows don't have screeners. I had a thing back during the Air America days where Janina was getting harassed by a right-wing talk show host in Massachusetts, which we ended up, it was the Ken something show. And I didn't realize that there were radio shows that don't have screeners and that they just pick up the calls. And so I just kept theoretically changing my my caller ID, and within a show there was not that many callers, so I just he would pick up a call, it would be me, he would hang up on me, he would pick up another call, and then he would pick up another call, it would be me, and then it was me, and then it was me. I would imagine most of these YouTube shows don't have screeners.
It depends on the level of the show. So a lot of them, like any show that's a bigger show, so any show that's happening at a radio, you know, a terrestrial radio network, and is just being simulcast on YouTube or Facebook or whatever, they all have screeners. But the unaffiliated ones, the ones where it's just a person who's streaming from their home, they often don't. So, yeah, it's a real – I'm going to tell you, just if you're starting a right-wing radio show and you have a live video stream and you don't have a call screener, it's just – it's really – it's bad news for you. It's not going to work out well. it's just – those shows are like – I mean, yeah, like J.J. McCartney is like that where he has an automated screener. So it says, please tell the host what you would like to talk about. And then it just does voice to text.
Oh, wow.
So that's like, but yes, I guess that's even one step further. Cause yeah, some of them are just picking up the call, answering it and saying hello. And they're doing it on the radio, on the air, which seems a crazy,
we do that.
Crazy way to do it.
That's what we do. But again, I'm not as concerned about it.
You have gotten pranked a few times though, I've noticed.
Oh, well, you definitely have gotten pranked. I think you did. You pranked us once.
Well, you know, what's funny. Somebody pranked you last week. I guess, but it wasn't, it was somebody on behalf of my channel, but not somebody that was, you know, I had no idea. They just sent me a DM on Twitter saying, hey, I pranked Sam on behalf of the Not Even a Show. So, yeah, so that happens quite a bit now, which is nice. It's kind of a cool thing about my channel, too, is if it's like, oh, I like this channel, you can just be on it and be a part of it by just making a prank call and sending it to me, you know?
Right. It's basically like a Baba Booey type of situation.
You know, what was the prank?
It was the Valve Half-Life, and then someone called you a boomer. I couldn't really follow it, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the key is that they called you a boomer. That's the main thing that you got to remember.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm a Gen Xer, so.
Yeah.
Don't ever do that.
Methinks thou doth protest too much. I like how it's like a fact that you can't even question. It's based on your age, and yet still I'm calling it into question.
Well, I mean, it's also maybe a mentality on some level, right? Well, so folks can head over to not even a show on YouTube. What is your YouTube channel? We'll obviously put a link at majority.fm, but just
YouTube.com/not even a show. And then I have a Patreon, patreon.com/not even a show. I do a bonus episode every week and a podcast. And then I do my own call-in show on Twitch, No Prank Radio, where I sort of beg people not to prank me. But unfortunately, Sam, you're not going to believe it, but they actually don't listen. And they do, in fact, all prank me.
It's a show that is completely overrun by pranksters.
Exactly. So another fun one, though, where you can sort of, you know, make your own character and call in. And so, yeah, it's been really fun. I just kind of started it as a bit of a goof. But, yeah, I do it three days a week. And, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Oh, good. All right. Well, Chris, it was great to talk to you. Really appreciate your work. And thanks for taking some time.
Hey, man, thank you so much. Thank you to Matt and everybody for, you know, boosting my stuff. It's been so huge for me. It means so much. And and I really appreciate it. And the last thing I want to say, Sam, is nice shirt. Bye.
Wait, what? What's wrong with my shirt?
Nothing. It's just, you know, it's
JJ treatment now.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. That guy drops off.
Seeds of doubt.
He goes away, and now I'm stuck. Folks, you can support this program by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. We gave you extra free show today, but we're going to head into the fun half in just a moment. We're going to pick up a couple more clips of the debate and also address these. Maybe we'll hold off on these Medicaid, you know, Social Security expansion, because I want to give them proper amount of time next week. But you can support the show by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also at majority.fm, you can, if you look at the podcast descriptions, you can always get the links to anything that we either talk about on the show or to support our advertisers. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Within the next week or so, what we're probably going to do is put up an introduction episode to the AM Quickie on our feed, so that you can have an opportunity to subscribe to that feed before we officially launch. And then we want everybody to subscribe to that new feed on the AM Quickie. Check it out. Gives you a very quick headlines for the day. And justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Michael, today is Friday. That means that Tuesday happened at one point this week already.
Kianga Yamana Taylor, from Black Lives to Black Liberation, Bhaskar Sankara and Napoleon the Legend. We talked about the legacy of Robert Mugabe, the Comoros Islands and French imperialism, Christopher Hitchens in 2020, the problem with the Warren Coalition, the Uruguay elections, much, 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 much more. Get the whole thing at patreon.com/TMBS. This weekend, an illicit history of Mugabe in Zimbabwe with Bill Fletcher Jr., the new executive editor of the globalafricanworker.com, which I would check out. Also, get your tickets to the Philadelphia Live Show November 23rd, the week before Thanksgiving, with Crystal Ball, Emma Viglin, Artesia Balthrop, and get them today. We'll see you soon.
Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, we speak with our friend, weed and sex journalist, Sophie St. Thomas, about my trip to LA, hurricane sex, pickup artist magic, octopus weed, relationship boredigism, and we get her take on Alexandra Kollontai's celebrated essay, Make Way for Winged Eros, A Letter to Working Youth, wherein she lays out kind of a framework, some ideas for how people might create new kinds of love and sex relationships in a post-capitalist society. So that's out now. Check it out. Also next week, we've got Aaron Bastani on fully automated luxury communism. Oh, and our live show, duh, at Littlefield, NYC, October 12th. Get your tickets.
Matt.
Literary Hangover to James Fenimore Cooper's The Pioneers. That was the second episode we did on that. We talked about Natty Bumppo as sort of a hunter that's opposed to capitalistic surplus production, but he's also racist, and how that illustrates the work of Frantz Fanon. So check that out.
All right, quick break, fun half. Bye.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back, back, back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back. Back.
I take all of it with my throat.
Alpha males are back. Back. Back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danerke's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break for people.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, folks! Reminder!
Have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
Hell out of the bank. 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 Hell out of the bank.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on!
Fuck them, fuck them, fuck them,
fuck them, fuck them, fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on.
What? Come on.
What?
Come on.
Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy, 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 pussy.